If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
My friends, the great experiment.
Strange new world.
Head. Trek.
Would you look at that?
The greatest trek.
Two people, you're all astronauts. Some kind of star.
Trek.
Welcome to Greatest Trek. It's a new Star Trek podcast from the makers of The Greatest Generation. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison.
I want to talk about something during the Marin this episode.
Oh, God. My fucking social anxiety just went absolutely through the roof.
Now, you know all about this because we haven't had a chance to talk about the Paramount Plus thing and the removal of Prodigy from the service and so forth.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked about it a little bit offline, but not on the show.
I would never speak for both of us under any other circumstances, but I feel pretty confident in saying for us both that we're pretty disappointed in that decision.
Yeah.
Both because we like the show and we like the people who make it. And I am mildly optimistic because of the optimism of those creators in what could possibly happen next at the time of this recording.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a change.org petition going around to save the show.
Do change.org petitions do anything ever?
I feel like there have been a couple of shows that have been snatched back from the brink by big fan outcries. But
yeah,
if I had to like guess about the future, my guess is that it's not Paramount Plus that would save it. It would be some other network. But you know, I think a big enough outcry maybe does make a group of executives worrying about the bottom line change their mind about something like this. So, you know, like the way animation works is that it takes forever to make animated shows. So there is a season two of that show, and I really hope we get to see it someday.
It definitely has a value. It has more value than sitting up on a fucking shelf.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're feeling powerless about yet another machine grinding up and throwing away something that you love, Aaron Waltke did put out some thoughts on Twitter about like what you can do in the aftermath of all this. And I wondered if you wanted to hear those, Ben.
Sure. I think he may have put this on Mastodon as well, but we should share it here.
Here's what Waltke has said. Using Star Trek Prodigy and Save Star Trek Prodigy hashtags are helpful and good, and you should use them. You should also buy all the stuff. Like, this is the sad consequence of this. Like, decisions involving money often respect money spent in the aftermath.
Right.
If you love Prodigy and you have little kids around, physical media is a great way to let the people know that there is money to be lost in a decision like this. There's DVDs and toys and video games and stuff. All that's out there. All that really helps. Consume the thing that you love and pay for it if you can is, you know, not just a message for now, but maybe a message for always, because you just never know when folks at a network are going to make a decision for you, you know?
Yeah.
It's a bummer. I'm bummed.
It's sad, but this isn't a sad show. We're a happy show. We like making jokes and having a good time. So we're not going to dwell on the sadness of it.
No.
If the last episode of Prodigy that we watch is the last that ever comes to light, I want to congratulate all of the talented folks that worked on that show. I thought out of a pretty weird mix of ingredients, they made something that was really special.
I agree. What a great note to end on.
And, you know, not having to see Rock Talk's mouth one more time, also something that we can all take comfort in.
I read a lot of press about the end of Prodigy, and no one was celebrating that aspect. I will remain the only champion of that great big upside. Hey, whoever decides to pick up Star Trek Prodigy, and I'm confident someone will, I think before you go to air, maybe you can do something about that mouth.
Yeah. And also, you know, if there's a couple of Star Trek podcasters you've ever wanted to see blown out of an airlock in a scene, I'm sure you'll have enough time to do some, you know, rewrites and make adjustments to season two before you start putting it out. Just saying.
And if you're involved at all in this decision and you want to spill some tea, you want to hurl some tea all around? Love to be the location for that kind of conversation.
Oh, yeah. Shoot your ropes of tea all over us.
Like that quite a bit. Well, good luck with choosing showtime in the divorce. I'm sure it'll be fine over there at Paramount.
Yeah. Adam, do you want to get into the episode of Strange New Worlds that we came to talk about today?
There is so much Strange New Worlds this episode. A full hour.
Yeah.
Strange New Worlds for the full hour. Oh, we better start, Ben.
It's season 2, episode 5, Charades.
You know the greatest danger facing us is an irrational fear of the unknown.
Some discovery.
The unknown.
We get a chapel's log right off the top, and the ship is on its way to the system of Vulcan to survey one of the moons there. This is a moon where an ancient civilization had lived, and then it vanished.
Yeah, the Karkovians.
But all that remains of them is an energy anomaly.
And some ruins.
And some ruins.
This seems like something that the Vulcans would do for themselves. They love scanning for life forms, you know?
Why let someone else scan your moon when you can do it yourself?
I mean, some people enjoy having their moon scanned. Maybe that's how the Vulcans get down, you know?
Yeah, maybe so. I mean, that would surprise me, given the tension we experience this episode.
So the captain has decided that this is a pretty light lift mission-wise, and the crew could use some downtime, so they're doing this one at impulse. They're on a slow cruise, and folks have a little bit of extra time on their hands to get into hijinks.
I do not like hijinks.
This is in keeping with Pike's lovemaking technique, right? He's not hitting it. He's slowly foreplaying it.
Yeah.
This one, right?
The anticipation is as delightful as the act itself.
So true. Everyone loves downtime. And I guess everyone on this ship enjoys fight training.
Yeah.
Because this is, second scene of a different character hitting the heavy bag in there.
No kidding.
I suppose you have to know how to fight if you're in Starfleet. Like, this isn't just a town full of people learning how to fight coincidentally. Like, they all need to know how to throw down.
Yeah. If Gorn's come on the ship, you got to punch that motherfucker.
Yeah.
So Nurse Chapel is getting ready to do her interview for this archaeological medicine fellowship that's actually sponsored by the Vulcan Science Academy. So she's here in system getting ready for it, and this is a project she's doing with a whole bunch of people. Everybody's kind of pitching in to help Nurse Chapel memorize all the stuff she needs to know to study the medicines of ancient civilizations, I guess.
Nerd! This is an episode that I thought was just delightfully edited the whole way through. The way the storytelling baton is passed throughout the different scenes.
Yeah.
The bookend quality to those scenes. The sneaky cuts that they make, you know, through bulkheads and stuff. This is one of those scenes that is really an example of that. Loved it.
It's really zesty editing. And I also really liked the filmmaking. Like, you know, this is all kind of the backdrop of a situation that is building over the course of this opening sequence, reestablishing that she and Spock are in a little bit of an awkward place interpersonally. And like, there's that shot in the elevator where he gets on board and she's on the other side of M'Benga. And there's just like really beautiful close-ups in that scene. It almost was like framed like a Wes Anderson film, the kind of like using symmetry to bring out certain qualities in the shot. And I loved it. I was having so much fun watching the beginning of this episode.
M'Benga's react here at the end of that ride is also so great. And like where they choose to make that cut is like mid turn. Yeah. Like, you know, there's a scene after this that we don't get to see between them. And that's great.
Yeah. So we toss over to a log by Spock. It's not only Nurse Chapel making logs this episode.
No. And Spock says some interesting things about the therapies that M'Benga has suggested for Spock, which makes me all the more curious about his reaction to experiencing those up close, like the consequences of them. I mean, like for M'Benga to see his weirdness on display and to know that he's had a role in their creation has got to make a tension in him.
Yeah.
But the headline is that he's fully suppressed all his emotions.
Yeah.
And he's fully suppressed his sense of smell also in Pike's quarters, where he's dabbled in some cooking lessons from him. And he can neither smell the food nor the humans around.
So what's the deal with Plomeek soup then? How piquant is it? You know, I guess it was piquant because Neelix thought it was too bland. So is Vulcan food all super bland?
But when I think about why it would be bland, I guess it's like a break for a Vulcan to not suppress feelings or sensations about the thing they're consuming.
Yeah.
Like, oh, this is a break. I'm having the most boring soup ever. I don't have to have a feeling about this at all.
You don't have to do the nasal suppressant if you live on Vulcan among only Vulcans, right?
Right.
But if a human like walks in and is like, oh man, my spaceship broke down. Hey, do you guys have a phone I could use? Is everybody in the room like, oh God.
It's got to go both ways though, right? Like if humans smell unusual to Vulcans, Vulcans and Vulcan the place must smell unusual to them. How could it not?
Unless it smells like barbecue or something and they're like, ah, this smells great.
It's not possible that Vulcan smells like nothing, right?
I don't know. Yeah, a lot of unanswered questions, W/R/T, the sense of smell in this episode, and just how much is being sacrificed by Vulcans that live among humans.
All I can say is, you're missing the good stuff here.
So, turns out, Spock's going to have to do this engagement ritual. He gets a call from T'Pring, and she's like, hey, you know, stuff with my parents is not going great right now, and your future mother-in-law is really riding my ass. So if we could do this engagement celebration dinner ASAP, that would really help me out a lot. And Spock is more than happy to oblige, except for not psyched about the, you know, rushing into the engagement dinner with this mother-in-law who is a great source of stress for his betrothed.
Yeah, I mean, he's so stressed that he's kind of trailing off mid-meeting with Pike. He's not fully engaged with his work in an unusual way, and Pike notices.
Yeah.
Pike and Spock have a pretty good relationship, like where they're able to talk about work and the other stuff, and Spock trusts him.
Spock is doing his best to reassure Pike that, like, this distraction of the engagement ritual that's coming up is just a momentary thing that's been on his mind, but it's not going to affect the mission. And the mission that they are discussing is this close flyby in a shuttlecraft of the ruins of the Karkovian civilization. So this is great timing for Pike to say, like, hey, a little staffing change on the mission. You're going to be going with Nurse Chapel.
And this contradicts what I said before about Spock and Pike being close enough to talk about personal shit, because clearly either Spock has not disclosed this to him or Pike's fucking with him.
Right. Yeah. It's almost like they're not as close as friends, not as close as family.
Right.
But Nurse Chapel will sit in that chair next to Spock, and they will go on that mission.
Yeah, that chair is shotgun on the shuttle.
Massively awkward, and they're pretty silent initially, but then the ice breaks when they start talking about work, and that seems to be an easy topic for both of them to keep the ball in the air with. This anomaly in question is a rupture in space-time, and it didn't seem like they had, like, really made any special preparations for flying a shuttle past an anomaly. Like, they're like, oh, shit, the anomaly that we knew about way ahead of time is sucking us in and potentially causing great damage to our shuttle and birdies.
When the shuttle approaches the edge of this hole,
or the event horizon, you might call it.
I should call it that. And immediately gouge out their eyeballs before going in.
Yeah, who can repair them?
I watched this scene a bunch of times because I was trying to figure out if they thought they were going to die. Because there's like that glance at each other. Like, I wondered, to what extent did they believe they were going to just go through a thing and appear on the other side and that was the danger, or if they thought they were going to die in the process? Because there's a tragedy in the idea of them thinking they were going to die and they're still not going to say anything to each other. Like, to die in that kind of silence?
That is tragic.
Oh, I thought about that a lot.
I interpreted that as a wordless, like, thank God we'll be in a different part of space-time and we can fuck and it won't count as cheating.
That's right. Yeah. Space-time hall pass. That's where their heads were?
Yeah, space-time hall pass is the new greatest trek rule, right? Like,
okay.
If it's not you're in a different time zone, it's you're in a different space-time continuum, it's fine.
This is why I am selling condoms made out of chronometric particles. Because when you're strapped up and the D is just in a totally different universe...
Mm.
That's not cheating.
It's time travel.
Yeah, not as satisfying for the other person in that scenario.
No, that's right, because once you roll it down, that D is gone.
Yeah. Does it just look like a coin?
That's got to be so disappointing. Like, like, to use the, like, middle school sex ed class imagery, like when you roll it down the banana, the banana disappears and the condom just like thunk, like it just sits empty.
Though the condom does not inflate, the banana is breathing.
The banana's just disappeared. No one's gonna be able to be satisfied by that.
A pocket dimension is a sector of space-time that is not connected to our present reality.
You may belong to a religion where pocket dimensions do not count as virginity loss.
This is referred to by the Mormons as God's blind spot.
The greatest trek is yet to come.
So, get all up in the guts of this anomaly. And it's like a fade to white kind of situation. And then we are in a POV of Spock on a bio bed in Six Bay, waking up, looking at Pike, Mbenga, and Nurse Chapel. They are looking down at him with great concern. And he is looking up at them, wondering what happened in this crash.
Very angelic are Pike, Mbenga, and Chapel above Spock's bedside.
I was really impressed by, like, these three actors are so fucking great looking that you can shoot them from this, like, super low angle and they all still look absolutely great.
You're so right about that.
How unfair is that?
Like, one out of three people shot from below should look pretty mid. Not these three.
It's nuts.
Yeah.
Next time we'd have Anson Mount on the show, I want to ask him about, like, how, like, what do you do to look that good from below?
I think you'd be very disappointed in the answer and how impossible it would be for either of us.
Yeah, you can't get here from there. Would be his answer.
Spock's got a great new haircut. And that's a pretty nice haircut. And great new ears.
Yeah, yeah. He had his ears done by the aliens, and he's suddenly human, Adam.
Sure is. He has a much better grasp of English profanity than he's ever had before either, because this is another great edit in the middle. We cut right into theme.
Yeah, it was good. It was good. I wish they'd used the phrase suddenly human and given him a slick back haircut just to really underline that. But
he's not a piece of shit anymore, Ben.
So Una and La'an do some like crime scene investigating on the shuttle, which has been like tuned and detailed. Like, it's in great shape. They find a little gadget resting on one of the seats waiting for them. And they refer to this thing as a calling card.
Good calling. That's bone.
When they take it up to Ensign Uhura, she uses it to blow in a FaceTime call to whoever fixed up the shuttle and fixed up Nurse Chapel and Spock.
I love how up for this the bridge crew is. Like, the pace of play here is so fast. Like, they recognize it's a calling card. They understand they have the ability to communicate with these people. Pike's like, I don't have anything else going on. Let's go ahead and do it. So they call up these people on FaceTime, and it's Yellow.
Yeah, Yellow is hotboxing the fuck out of the room she is in. We don't get to actually see Yellow's face because there's so much smoke in there.
Yeah.
But Yellow is of Kirkov, and Yellow kind of gives like robot on the other end of a customer service hotline kind of answers to their questions, and is very repetitive. But what we come to understand is that the Kirkovians found the ruined shuttle after it ran afoul of this, what they call it, it's like a tunnel, right? Like a transport tunnel is what the anomaly is. They did their best to fix everything up and send it back in one piece. But, you know, one of the crew members had two conflicting sets of instructions in his glove compartment. So they picked the one that matched the other member of the away team and left out all that Vulcan DNA crap.
If you don't know anything about Vulcans and humans, and you're just trying to fix a thing that's broken that showed up on your doorstep or whatever, like, everything kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
It's explained in that tight vernacular that the Kirkorians speak in. And when Yellow hangs up on them, it seems like it's not over. Like, this is a type of being that you could have another conversation with. It doesn't seem like remediation is final.
Right. But like, when you get the robot on a customer service call, it's very hard to like escalate, you know, like I want to talk to a robot that has more authority to help me with this is like not a question you can ask.
How did no one press zero during this FaceTime call? Like, the idea that they just get hung up on is ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah. And the idea that they never try calling again also is very silly.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Thanks are not required. No further contact is necessary.
But they talk to Spock about like, hey, so here's what happened. How feel you? And Spock feels.
This is just an enormous Ethan Peck episode on every level. It's not just that he's acting human, but the way he acts human. And in the course of such a compact amount of time, scene to scene, it made me feel crazy to watch him.
Yeah.
In a very effective way.
Yeah, because there's lots of stuff that is still super Spocky about him. And I feel like it's the habit of being Spock, not the essence of being Spock that he's bringing to it. Yeah. I don't know. I think that Tim Russ set a high bar the couple of times that he played a Vulcan who was stripped of his Vulcan-ness in Voyager. And I think Ethan Peck did a great job following in those footsteps.
This version of Spock is such an interesting reminder about how it isn't just human emotion, but the things that trigger human emotions that have got to be unusual for him. Like the idea of hunger or fatigue or frustration. It's not just like the pictures outside of a public bathroom in an airport going like, how clean am I? Go from like smiley, straight face and frown. It's like a fully realized spectrum of consequences and feelings involved. And we're made to understand that in a very efficient amount of time, beginning in this scene.
Yeah, like even him making a joke in this scene sort of feels part and parcel of that. Like the urge to make a joke is an emotional urge, and the effect of a joke is an emotion.
In a way that, like, I think we all know that intrinsically from being human beings, but like to see someone grapple with that as a character was really interesting and fun.
I feel grateful that you're trying to help me. Seriously, it's so nice of you.
He can smell now. He smells bacon.
And he's hungry, which means he overeats bacon.
Yeah. He overdrinks drinks. I mean, this was another kind of montage-y cutting between scenes with the same character sequence, a lot like Nurse Chapel's log at the beginning of the episode. And it's such a funny idea of how you can kind of celebrate the highs and lows of being human with a character who isn't used to it.
It's also an example of a show that isn't a comedy editing for comedy very deftly.
Yeah.
This is great.
Yeah, it was good. It is brought up that he is feeling all of these feelings in a way not dissimilar to a teenager feeling all of their new feelings for the first time. This is something that La'an kind of talks him through. I feel like they ring the Spock is acting like a petulant teen bell a few times throughout this episode.
Yeah, if that's the starting place where you're developing this character, it seems like that could be a good place to start if you're him.
Yeah.
And now I'm embarrassed.
So meanwhile, Nurse Chapel is having a terrible time because she is racked with survivor's guilt for having come away from whatever this very vaguely described shuttle accident was totally unscathed. They still don't really know what happened to them. So she's feeling really bad about the whole thing. And it seems that it is also complicated by the feelings that she has for Spock and the fact that he is not really the guy that she has those feelings for anymore. And also the fact that she is like under a ton of stress studying for this application she's trying to do.
It's hard working with your friends. And that's what this is, right? She's got a job to do, but she's also got a job to do for her bud.
Yeah.
And possible romantic interest. So this has got her all scrambled up. And I've got to believe that showing up late to this interview with the Vulcan is a terrible move, a career-limiting move. And when you see the interview, it's as bad as you might think it'll go. Yeah. It's real bad.
No way you get this job if you show up late to the thing, right?
I mean, you got to believe that this Vulcan person is going to be very particular about the requirements. I don't want to defend him because I like Chapel more than just about every character on the show, but like, you got to know that like fieldwork being a substitute for these very specific expectations, like, that's not going to work. You got to get in the system first to change it, not try to change it before even getting in there.
Hmm. Yeah, I guess so. I didn't know what the job requirements were, and it didn't seem like they made it that clear to her either. It seemed like maybe there was like more of a cultural misunderstanding situation going on with that.
I think you're right about that, because like the main thrust of the failure in Chapel's expectations is that the instructor was like, we not only have things to say, but ways to say them.
Right.
And you're not saying them right.
Well, yeah. And like, she calls him Mr. Dumbass all through the interview. And that's just another example of her not saying things right.
The name is Dumas.
What's going to make this bad feeling better afterwards? You've just blown the interview. You really wanted it. You're professionally disappointed. In the corridor, Spock finds Nurse Chapel and gives her a hug. And Spock's funny here. He's real funny. Good job by Spock.
That's an interesting puzzle, especially I feel like you go through in adolescence, like, when is a hug something somebody wants? And I never felt like I knew, so I remember it being like a thing in high school, you know, like,
yeah,
sometimes you'll get a hug from someone and be like, oh my God, that was really nice.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah. That's sweet.
Yeah.
Vulcans can be such jerks.
This is the moment in the episode I started to recognize what kind of Star Trek episode this was going to be, because Star Trek does this all the time. A character you love has been changed, and they start to demonstrate behaviors that you actually like better than the original flavor. And you're like, are they going to murder this guy at the end and then never talk about it?
Each of you is going to have to live with this.
Because Spock's pretty likable here, and he does many likable things throughout the episode. This was the creeping thought in the back of my mind, starting pretty much here.
The back of his head was not creeping, though. So.
No, yeah.
We need to score a lot of platinum fast.
We're licensed businessmen.
Hi, this is Biz, and this is the final season of One Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting. This is going to be a year of celebrating all that makes this podcast and this community magical.
I'm so glad that I found your podcast.
I just cannot thank you enough for just being the voice of reason as I'm trying to figure all of this out.
Thank you, and cheers to your incredible show and the vision you had to provide this space for all of us.
This is still a show about life after giving life. And yes, there will be swears. You can find us on MaximumFun.org. And as always, you are doing a great job.
All right, class. Tomorrow's exam will cover the science of cosmic rays, the morals of art forgery, and whether or not fish can drown. Any questions? Yes, you in the back.
What is this?
It's the podcast Let's Learn Everything,
where we learn about science and a bit of everything else. My name's Tom. I study cognitive and computer science, but I'll also be your teacher for intermediate emojis.
My name's Caroline, and I did my master's in biodiversity conservation, and I'll be teaching you intro to things the British Museum stole.
My name's Ella. I did a PhD in stem cell biology, so obviously I'll be teaching you the history of fan fiction.
Class meets every other Thursday on Maximum Fun.
So do I still get credit for this?
No.
Obviously not.
No.
It's a podcast.
Hey-ya!
Cheetahs don't deserve Nausicaa in Latinum.
Spock's mama beams aboard.
Mia Kirshner's back.
Yeah.
How about that?
Love her. Never totally feel comfortable with her being cast as his mother. She does not look old enough.
Right. Yeah.
I have no idea how old Mia Kirshner is, but just based on the way she and Ethan Peck look, I'm like, they could play brother and sister.
It's true. Spock's beanie better be on the fucking Star Trek merchandise page at once after this. It's a great beanie.
It's a solid beanie. It kind of feels like it's there to be on the Star Trek merch website, though, right?
Yeah. I want it.
It's not silly. It's regulation.
Pike has a great sequence here because Pike helps cover for the wearing of the beanie, and then Pike attempts to cover for the idea that this special dinner isn't a good idea to be having anymore to a very different amount of success, I would say.
Yeah.
Pike is with those.
It seems like Amanda Grayson is really desperate to make sure stuff goes well with T'Pring's family, because she is just as aware of what a tricky situation T'Pring is in as anyone else. I did think it was a little bit presumptive of her to just like arrange that the Vishal ritual would take place on the Entrepreneur without actually asking the captain or anyone if that was cool.
I thought so too. You remember when you were like auditioning places to do a rehearsal dinner before your wedding. And like, you're coming up with your different ideas based on cost and comfort and location and so forth.
Sure.
Say you had a great location picked out. Checks almost all the boxes, but the one box that isn't checked, it smells like human butt. This is the decision that has been made here.
Yeah.
That smells like ass.
I don't remember if we've mentioned it, but the details of Spock's injuries have not been transmitted to T'Pring or anyone on Vulcan.
Yeah.
But the fact that he has been injured has. So the idea is that they can do this on the ship, and that way Spock won't have to travel while he's recovering from whatever it was that happened to him in the shuttle accident.
The risks are so high. The wedding is off if this special dinner doesn't go according to plan.
Yeah.
That seems like too much. Come on. It's not just that it'll be awkward or they won't get along. It's just over with. That's harsh.
For a people as logical as they are, the Vulcans really do cue to ritual in this really intense way.
Yeah.
I feel like there's more tension in that than Star Trek usually explores, you know? Like,
I think so too, yeah.
I think ritual is really important, but I've never heard a Vulcan character talk at length about why.
What these characters need to talk about is how they're going to get human Spock through this. And in Pike's quarters, he and Amanda Grayson and Spock discuss if they are to attempt this, how it's going to work. Like, can we teach Spock to lie? That's basically what they got to do in order to have him pass as a Vulcan. And first they're going to fit him for ears.
Yeah. Amanda's like, hey, I did you wrong as a parent all those years ago, not teaching you about your human side. So this is going to be a crash course. You're going to trick T'Pring's parents into thinking you're still Vulcan. And I'm going to teach you how to do it.
You'd think that the lying lessons would be the very first class, but no, it's about the ceremony, mostly, and his ears, and his speech patterns.
Flatter, more robotic. I am Vulcan. I love logic.
I guess it all qualifies as a lie, now that I think about it. Like, ears are a lie, holding scalding teapot is a lie, speaking in a pattern that isn't yours is a lie.
It has a lot of the same energy as in a con man movie, like the team practicing the con, you know?
Yeah.
He's got to pick up this big pot of tea that will burn a human, but would be perfectly cool to a Vulcan to pick up. He's going to have to endure the hourglass of shame in which, as a ritual, they set a timer and the parents of the betrothed couple get to tell them how disappointing they are to them. I feel like that's actually a ritual I can really get behind. Just confine all of that shit to one-minute session, you know?
You and I are in total agreement about this. I feel like to many, many people, the very concept would be horrifying. But if you could just rip off that Band-Aid and just like concentrate your fire on one target for 1 minute, and then have it be done and forgiven.
Yeah. And like, if any of that creeps back in, be like, no, you had your minute. You cannot do this now.
Yeah. Hourglass. Yeah. Look at it. Finally, there's the mind meld and Spock's inability to do this while not having any facial expressions is as difficult as any of the other challenges.
You look constipated.
This has got Amanda Grayson ready to quit.
It just doesn't seem like it's going to work.
But is the medicine going to work? Doesn't seem that way either.
No. Nurse Chapel has been working really hard on figuring out a way to fix Spock, and she gives up on it and now would like to go to the anomaly and ask the Karkovians for help. She's like, these are the people that did this. They're going to know how to undo this.
So who are Chapel's ride or dies? It's Ortegas and Uhura.
Yeah.
And they are ready to fly into that hole with her.
Or,
even though it's off the record and without permission.
Pretty fun gang to pile into a shuttlecraft and go do something rouge.
They're the right gang, though, right? You want the ship's communicator to be able to deal with this automated customer service person.
Exactly.
They're going to know.
It's like, you know, the difference between me calling an airline and my wife calling an airline. She's going to get some shit done, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. So we cut to the transporter room where Spock stands now in Vulcan ears, even though he's human.
Yeah. He's been studying his book, The Actor Prepares, by Spockoslavsky.
There are no small Vulcans. There are only small ears.
T'Pring beams aboard and is not ready to do Vulcan formalities. She's so fucking wrung out from spending a couple of days with T'Pril, her mom, that she just wants to get to Spock's quarters and chill the fuck out. And as they're walking, Spock is supposed to let her in on the thing. I'm actually human right now, and I'm going to be trying to trick your parents. But she is unloading all of this stuff that she's clearly stressed about.
How often does this happen to you? There is something so familiar about this.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Spock has an angle. He wants to confide in a special person. But, like, the other person's personal drama is such that, like, who'd want to put another helping on top of that? This is his most human-like quality, is this moment and the perception of it.
Yeah, I don't want to dump bad news on someone that's already going through something is extremely relatable.
Yeah.
So you can see him kind of decide not to tell her based on the, like, energy that she's bringing to the situation.
You also understand how the show chooses not to do that either, because we've gotten an episode where they've been conspiratorial about a hijinks thing. And as much as I wanted that, and I really wanted that, like, I'm cool with the episode deciding to go in a different direction there for tension reasons.
Yeah, I was too.
And that we are in agreement.
People that are not worried about saying what they're thinking out loud are T'Pril and her husband, who walk into Pike's quarters and immediately start complaining about the smell.
Do I smell more human?
T'Pril's husband has got this vibe where, like, I don't know how many sets of parents you've ever met in your dating life, but I find that, like, over the course of my life, there is often one of the two parents I'm confident I can get along with.
Uh-huh.
And it's rarely ever both, and it's rarely ever neither. And this guy wants to make it work.
Yeah.
He wants to eat the food. He wants to be complimentary of the food.
But he also doesn't want to catch those hands from T'Pril later. So he is going along to get along a lot.
How much did you expect an off to the side T'Pril's husband and Spock conversation to go, like, T'Pril's husband being like, you got to get out of this, man. You don't want to end up like me. Save yourself.
I had a full head of hair like you at the beginning of this marriage. Look at me now.
Look, when my wife's back is turned, I'm going to go to fucking town on these canapes. They're the only joy I have in my life.
I don't know why we never thought to put salt in them on our planet.
He's so happy. Like, as happy as a Vulcan can be in this scene.
Yeah.
It's great.
Oh, these are delicious.
Canapes my ass. That's a Ritz cracker and chopped liver.
And good for Pike, like, being the field promoted chef for this. You can tell he's enjoying it. And crucially, it gives his character a reason to be in the room, because I think we really need that. We need Pike reacts.
Yeah. It's such a funny scene, especially after this whole season of, like, almost no Pike or kind of humiliated Pike, that again, he is just, like, in the room getting the smell of his apartment dragged and getting his recipes dragged and, like, just having to grin and bear it because this is so high stakes for Spock.
Yeah. Pike's life and his choices and his quarters are just collateral damage for this.
It really is. So out in the shuttle, they start their strafing run on the anomaly, and they cannot establish contact through this space butthole the way they want to. They're talking about like shearing forces and like trying to wedge the shuttle into the event horizon, and it's dangerous as fart, but to save Spock, they're going to have to do it. So the three of them unanimously decide to do the most dangerous thing, which is go right into the space butthole.
Do you think it's unanimous? Some pretty enormous peer pressure at work here. And this is like one of those do we do it guys kind of things where like by saying you're not in, you're really telling them to turn the shuttle back around and take you all the way back.
What kind of wing women would Uhura and Ortegas be if they didn't help Nurse Chapel at a time like this?
I'm not saying they're not wing women. I'm saying that there's some pretty strong peer pressure happening here.
I think Ortegas peer pressured herself. I think Uhura was 100% down for the cause, and Ortegas was like, I have a fucking reputation to uphold. Let's do the damn thing.
Yeah. So they go in.
Hold on to your butts.
And at dinner, Spock's got to go in on that teapot.
Yeah.
And the faces that Spock makes at Pike, the faces that Amanda Grayson makes at him, when T'Pring grabs Spock's hand after and hurts him, and like the expression on Spock's face during that, like amazing nonverbal action in this scene that yeah. I just love.
The scene is so tense. And I was like writing in my notes, and there's something about the irony of a tea ceremony being really tense in particular that I really liked.
Because the context of tea is almost always chill.
Like the chillest thing, like yeah. it's like associated with apex chillness, and
uh-huh.
this is like the opposite. It was so great. T'Pring has to whisper a couple of course adjustments for him as he's pouring the hot water over the stuff to make the tea.
What's the coffee that pours like this? Is this Kyoto-style tea that's coming down through the works?
Yeah, but I think Kyoto-style is even slower, right?
Yeah. I really like this contraption.
I did too. Sell that on fucking StarTrek.com.
Yeah.
Or we'll sell it on Podshop.biz.
Yeah, yeah, do it or we will. Podshop.biz.
Podshop.biz.
In the shuttle, they arrive in interdimensional space, which sort of looks like a kaleidoscope town. They're in this kind of formless void. It's very colorful and sparkly. It's also being hotboxed. They meet Blue, who is smoking just absolutely massive clouds.
Are you yellow?
No. I am Blue.
This scene made me uncomfortable because I'll admit it. I thought it was yellow at first. And confronting my own inherent possible interdimensional racism is a hard moment for me.
I look forward to your quad box apology.
Yeah, I'm drafting that up now as we speak.
Just stress that you're ready to start listening.
Yeah, I'll do that.
Man, the Karkovians are such bureaucratic asswipes, aren't they?
They're not so bad. They just have rules. No one's on the same level. That's the problem. They need to get on the same level.
It's nice to have rules, but not if the rules are impenetrable and unknowable to everybody else. It's like, why the fuck is my class Y boarding pass not eligible for a complimentary upgrade? You know? I don't know what a class Y is versus a class D. That wasn't an option when I was buying it.
It isn't just the rules, but it's the inflexibility of those rules, right?
Right.
Because not yellow, Blue makes the case that I fixed him. Like, we all fixed him. And not only did we fix him, the comment period is over.
Yeah. But we didn't know about the comment period. And so they're like, okay, bring us yellow because we want to speak to your manager. And clearly, yellow is Blue's manager. At this point in the scene, they're at yeah, loggerheads, I would say.
They really are. It's so irritating to need a thing and to confront this construction, like this vernacular construction that is so impenetrable.
Yeah.
When it would be so much easier to have a human interaction with another person where you're just plainly stating what you need and what you're trying to accomplish. Oh, that is like a really disappointing part of modern life.
Yeah. It would be better were it not that way.
If it is to be said, so it is.
But we got to cut back to Pike's quarters where they have flipped over the hourglass and T'Pril starts laying into Spock over turning his back on Vulcan and T'Pring by having his complicated Starfleet schedule. And they just fucking light his ass up.
Like sands in the hourglass, these are the airing of grievances.
And when they get done, Spock like excuses himself and goes and like screams into a towel and stuff. I thought this was like some of Ethan Peck's best work.
Yeah. He's so limited physically by Spock ordinarily, to see him bust out of those limitations as an actor and like put them on display was a real treat.
Yeah, it really was.
These grievances are tough because the parents disagree with how harsh they can and should be to their children.
Yeah.
But like there's something inarguable about the grievances leveled against Spock. Like, hey, you're never around. Can't argue with that.
No.
And choosing Starfleet over your responsibilities to T'Pring also seems pretty difficult to argue with. And that's going to be what makes it so hard emotionally for him. It's not just that he's being criticized by people whose approval he cares about getting. It's that they're right, maybe?
Yeah. There's not a part where they flip the hourglass back over and you get to defend yourself. You know, there's no rebuttal in the ritual.
Yeah. Why isn't that a part of this?
No, it's about, because it's about hearing it from somebody else's perspective and endeavoring to
improve. It's about taking it.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. So back in Pocket Dimension, Nurse Chapel learns that Spock moved the shielding in the shuttle to specifically protect her at great risk to himself when they were crashing.
On a shuttle, there's this little dial on the dashboard. You can do like symmetrical shields and then it's complicated shields. And that was the setting Spock chose. What does that mean?
Right. That's really intense thing to learn, and she's trying to make the case like, fix him, he's my friend, and there's, you know, Yellow is pushing back with we don't just let anyone ask us to fix someone, like you have to be closer than friends to do that
or have their power of attorney.
Right. And this is sort of a end of the fifth element moment where Chapel has to like say out loud the thing that she's feeling in her heart, and it is hard to do that even when Ortegas and Uhura have turned around so that they're not looking at her during.
Christine Chapel has cut Miriam Y incisions into a million different birdies in her distinguished career. She's seen guts and guts and guts. She's seen probably the grossest shit you can ever imagine. For Uhura and Ortegas to have to turn around so that she doesn't see their faces in order to deliver this truth about herself, I thought was great.
Yeah.
Like, there was something so difficult about that. She could not look at them during. I love that take.
So express this, she does, and back in the quarters, like Pike kind of helps Spock out by putting some brakes on their ritual, slowing it down by suggesting a game of charades. Like, on the one hand, like, I respect Pike for like trying to help Spock out and trying to find a way to slow the proceedings down to give Nurse Chapel time to fix Spock. On the other hand, like, it doesn't seem like T'Pril's energy is, I'm not going to look this up later. And when T'Pril looks up what charades is after they get home and find out it is not a sacred human ritual.
This moment was written by theater nerds. Like, that's the only way you get to this moment. And I'll say this, I would rather have my marriage dissolve than to play charades under these conditions. I wouldn't do it. I couldn't do it.
I couldn't see how the episode was going to give us the promise of the premise here. Like,
yeah,
they named the episode Charades. I was like, is Spock going to do, like, you know, try to spell out Casablanca or something?
Fortunately, we get saved by the doorbell, right?
We do. The vitamins come just in time.
And instead of what Spock needs to turn Vulcan, it's Dr. Mbenga's green juice.
And he fucking tears Savin and T'Pril apart.
Shoot him!
I thought that the scene where Nurse Chapel was administering this hypo spray to Spock was incredible because it is so loaded. Like, she is saving him. She is putting him back the way she wants him, but at the same time furthering his means of continuing on a path that leads directly away from her.
It feels like a form of lobotomy, doesn't it?
And it's like heartbreaking for that reason.
Yeah. And the moment she decides to jab him is like the exact moment that he intends to like disclose the big truth. She doesn't want to hear it.
Yeah.
Great moment.
Great moment. He now can actually mind meld. So he goes back into the room and mind melds his mom. It's a memory from going to school back in the day. Nothing major, but that's not the requirement. So T'Pring's family hand him the W.
How about T'Pring coming to the defense of Amanda and Spock here? I thought this was a great moment for her.
Yeah. Yeah, I did too.
Like, do you have to shit on everything, Mom?
God! Yeah.
They did the thing.
The ritual has been completed. Your assessment is not required.
Like, it kind of seems like a moment where T'Pril and Savin are going to turn out to be okay. Like, you know, didn't think you could do it, but great work. But it's this kind of backhanded compliment about overcoming his handicap. And he takes great umbrage with this and de-ears himself.
How surprised were you that human ears were under the Vulcan ears? I thought for sure he was going to pull off those ears and his Vulcan ears would have returned.
What if he had just like little nubbins, like they're starting to grow back, but they haven't, you know?
like a succulent growing a new thing.
Yeah, and you know, he just lights them up. He makes them feel like the assholes they are because they consider humans less than, and he hits them with the truth that, like, to have fooled you while I was genetically human is a sign of my true strength.
Well, I think one aspect I really like about this scene is that he makes it more about his mother than he does about himself.
Yeah.
And that her humanity doesn't make her less at all. Like, he comes in defense of her almost more than he does himself.
Yeah. Like, she lives on Vulcan and fucking eats plates of shit from you people all the time. And
yeah,
she still does it because of her strength.
It's interesting the look you get on T'Pring's face at the end of this confrontation, because I really wondered whether she was upset because of the outburst or because of the conflict or whatever. But in the scene that follows, it's clear that her issue was that she was the last to know about this.
Yeah.
Like, yet again, this was a thing that Spock went through without her. And it sucks to be someone's special person and to not be in on the struggle. And I really felt for T'Pring here. Like, she doesn't believe that he trusts her for whatever reason, and that seems sufficient enough to call for a break in the relationship.
It's a tough moment because you totally saw it from his side when he decided to not stress her out with this new information right before the ceremony. And now you totally see it from her side that this is another violation of her trust and another reason she will always wonder about him.
Yeah.
So with their relationship on pause, we cut over to Nurse Chapel having a follow-up interview with the guy from the Vulcan Science Academy, where he tells her that if she would like to waste her time, she can try applying again. And she she absolutely fucking teabags him in this moment. She's like, oh, you're interested in archaeological medicine? How about this fucking shit? I just flew into a WHO and archaeology medicine with somebody named Yellow, who was baked as fuck.
I like this realization that both Chapel and Spot go through, the idea that I may be better without you or this or whatever I've been struggling with for so long.
Yeah. Pike finally has someone to share a glass of brown liquor with.
Yeah, he's not pouring those two glasses into one. Oof. After this. He's probably pouring a second for both of them.
Yeah. Has a nice hang with Spock.
I hope we get more of this, like, Boston Legal style denouement on the rooftop where two of our favorite characters are just sort of toasting the episode at the end. Give me more of this. That's fun.
Yeah. I also liked the scene with Spock and Amanda where he apologizes for having been so self-centered. Like, we all go through this as we become adults. Like, part of childhood is being super self-centered, like, and failing to recognize the struggles of people around you, because being a kid is really hard and confusing as fuck. And there's a moment when you become an adult and you see a thing that your parents had to deal with from their perspective, and you realize what a tough road they had their own damn self.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't excuse any of the fucking bullshit they did.
No, it doesn't. And we'll never forgive them for that.
No, ever. And then we end on a very steamy sex scene with Spock and Christine Chapel.
Yeah, I didn't know a lute could be used like that.
Yeah, pretty exciting.
Very. Spock's plucking all the strings.
Did you like this episode, Adam?
I think to like the episode means that this ending needed to hit for you. And I really did feel the catharsis of the moment of Spock and Chapel finally letting the emotional dam break and having cover to do it. Like, they couldn't do this up until now. Spock was attached. Chapel knew this. But I thought a lot about how I also didn't want the tension to go away. Like, I think the show's done a really good job at spacing them in an interesting fashion and, like, maintaining that. And I don't want this to turn into the last season of The Office, where the conflict of the day is Chapel and Spock's finding a babysitter or whatever. Like, I like the original flavors of these characters. I hope that they continue to create interesting stories if they are romantically involved. The episode has... before the ending, I thought was super solid. And I think it's because of the strengths of the ensemble. Again, not a huge Anson Mount episode, but we get his seasoning on scenes that really make them great. We get Giasandu. I feel like it diminishes her to begin by saying how distractingly pretty she is, because she is, I think, really, really funny. And she's funny in this episode, too. The way she grapples with what's going on seems like very lived in and relatable for being in a culture that is not either of those things. Like, she somehow performs that magic trick that, like, makes you feel for her and actually agree with her decision at the end.
Yeah.
And if we're getting Alien of the Week or whatever, a very different and interesting kind of alien than we've gotten before, and a novel solution to a problem. Remains to be seen whether or not Uhura and Ortegas and Chapel are in trouble for this, though. Like, I understand we were like nearing an hour. We probably couldn't have that scene. Maybe that scene was cut out, but wow, you talk about freelancing.
Yeah.
Pike, maybe time to pull the reins on the crew a little bit when Spock's taking the ship out and the rest of the bridge crew are stealing shuttles and doing this kind of freelancing. I don't know. But yeah, I think in totality, I did like the episode a lot with that note about like what happens from here and being maybe a little curious about that. What about you?
I totally agree with your assessment about the end. Like, I am ultimately disappointed in this episode because I've always shipped Chortegas.
Mm-hmm.
And this seems to further foreclose on that. But yeah, like, I'm also moderately excited because I think that when you get your Sam and Diane characters together, it's a big Rubicon for a show to cross.
Yeah.
And I think that this writer's room is good enough to pull something off with this in a way that I'm kind of curious to see.
They absolutely are. Like, there's no evidence that they can't make this work. I trust them. As long as Paramount doesn't rip the fucking rug out from underneath a successful production.
Yeah. I'd be really shocked if they did that to this show, but yeah. Who knows? Well, Adam, do you want to go check on our Priority One inbox, see if there's anything shocking in there?
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
I've steered my shuttle right into the event horizon of our first Priority One message, Ben. It's of a promotional nature. That message goes like this. Trapped in escape pods, in the aftermath of the Battle of Wolf 359, four Starfleet officers band together to stay alive as they search for other survivors. Check out 359, the Star Trek fan film production by Dave Ellis that briefly gives Bill and Wendy their own ships, grants Adam and Ben their wish of being blown out an airlock on Star Trek. See it at ellisstudios359.com. Thanks again to Uxbridge Shimoda for playing in our sandbox with us.
That's Dave Ellis. Thanks for getting a P1, Dave Ellis. Yeah, we were we lent our vocal talents, and I do the finger flexions with the with the Vulcan salute mm-hmm. around the word talent to a couple of characters, and then Bill and Wendy did as well. So yeah, we're all in 359.
So you can check it out at ellisstudios359.com. I always have a hard time reading two lowercase L's together. Do you?
Oh.
Like, I can't tell how many there are. Maybe I need an eye exam.
Yeah, I would get that looked at.
All right, that's probably fine.
Adam, our next P1 is from Kevin McCoy. It's to Uxbridge Shimoda Quality Control. Uh-oh.
Oh, jeez.
Goes like this. I recently bought a P1 on Greatest Gen celebrating how great its editing and quality has gotten. Today I'm here for kind of the opposite reason. I bought this P1 on Greatest Trek because Ben's delivery of that pun at the end of Strange New Worlds Season 2 Episode 1, They Haven't Gone Away, made me do an actual spit take. Incredible podcastry. Thank you.
Incredible moment, Ben.
Yeah.
Nice work by you.
We were all here for it. So.
Yeah. Yet another great comedy moment from you that I probably just ignored and sped past in order to get to my own punchline when I really should have been a more generous podcast co-host. But that's the thing. We got Kevin McCoy and people like Kevin to take note.
We don't deserve you guys, friends of DeSoto. And we don't deserve your Priority One messages, but if you've got one that you really, really want to send, send it to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron and set it up whenever you want.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you discover yourself an Edward Larkin?
I'm going to give it to Una for this episode. She really doesn't do much. Like, she's in that checking out the crime scene briefly. But mostly what she got to do in this episode is be in the hang at the bar that we see repeated a couple of times where, like, we didn't even talk about, like, Spock flipping out on Sam Kirk for having a messy work area in a McLaughlin group. But part of that montage was contrasting Spock as a Vulcan in a hang where everybody's laughing at a joke versus Spock as a human in a hang where everybody's laughing at a joke. And I really liked that Una was, like, mainly in this episode to laugh her ass off.
What a great day at the office.
Yeah.
For Rebecca Romijn, right?
I know.
That's cool.
Yeah. So I think she's going to be my Edward Larkin today. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to make mine Spock for those scenes with Sam Kirk. Like, I saw myself on this show maybe as deeply as I ever have. Like a man who just could not deal with someone else's lack of fastidiousness.
Mr. Kirk, clean your mess.
But I think just generally, Ethan Peck, this episode is such a fucking condor spreading his wings, like, to fully fill the frame of this show. Like, I really enjoyed watching him go in all the places. I think that's part of what made me feel so sad about the moment Chapel, like, let's just call it, Chapel sacrifices this Spock in order for the previous one to live.
Right.
And I thought for a moment that we might be sacrificing a big plus to the show as well in that moment. So, yeah, I love that Spock. RSVP, that Spock.
RSVP, HS.
There goes a real one. And, yeah, it's going to be my Edward Larkin this time around.
Yeah. Great Larkin, Adam.
Hey, you too.
Do we have any warning bois coming in over the transom?
Oh, let me check.
Prepare a buoy and launch it when ready.
Warning buoys.
An emergency buoy. A warning buoy.
Ben, we always read a warning bois at the end of an episode of Greatest Trek, and the reason why is that messages like these do a great job at filtration.
Mm.
They get the word out about Greatest Trek being a great show that people will really love. But only certain types of people.
Yeah.
Our people.
Our people. Friend of DeSoto type people.
Ben, I'm going to drop two on you.
Okay.
And these come from Apple Podcast Reviews.
Okay. All right.
This is an event horizon that I do not dare go. But Wendy dug these out, and I was absolutely delighted by these 2 5-star reviews. Here's the first. Headline, greatness. Here's the body. You guys make some really stressful days bearable, and I hope you know what an impact you have on people's lives. If there's a show to support, it's this one, so please do so. Keep up the good work, guys.
Aw.
Isn't that nice?
That's really nice.
Here's another 5-star review. Title, My Favorite Podcast. Barty? Ben and Adam are the best podcast hosts in the world. I could listen to them talk about and riff on literally anything. They can make a show about rewatching episodes of Meet the Press from 40 years ago and still make it entertaining.
I don't know if we could do that, but
how about that?
We could try.
5-star reviews are a great way to elevate this show and the shows that we do up in the algorithm.
Yeah.
And as everyone knows, we worship at the altar of the algorithm in order to ensure our survival. So, if you're able, we'd really appreciate a 5-star review if you haven't left one already. And we appreciate the 2 reviews that I just read on the show. Really great.
We sure do. If you're newly using Apple Podcasts because of the end of Stitcher or whatever, now would be a great time to go in and leave reviews for the shows that you like, because it really helps us.
If you're struggling to figure out what you might write, just maybe write something about how we could do a rewatch of an old new show and make it entertaining. Your choice. Whatever new show you like.
Totally up to you. With all that said, we're going to throw the keys to the pod car to the editor of this episode, Ryan Whedon. Take it away, Ryan.
Thanks, Ryan.
Greatest Trek is an Uxbridge Shimoda podcast on the Maximum Fun Network. It's hosted by Ben Harrison and Adam Pranica and produced by Wendy Pretty. This episode was edited by Ryan Whedon. Season 2, Episode 6 of Strange New Worlds is titled Lost in Translation. You can hear the logline for that episode at the end of Monday's Greatest Generation. And you can hear Ben and Adam's review of that episode in this feed next Friday. Adam Ragusea created the original music for the show. You can check out his podcast and YouTube cooking channel by searching for Adam Ragusea. Special thanks to Nick Ditmore, who created the artwork for the show, and to Bill Tilley, who manages the @GreatestTrek social media accounts on Instagram, Twitter, and Mastodon. Give those accounts a follow and use the #GreatestTrek when you talk about the show online. Big thanks to everyone who supports the show financially. If you want to pitch in, you can do so at MaximumFun.org/join. And you can always support the show for free by leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or spread the word by telling a friend. That's it for this week. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on Greatest Trek.
Maximum Fun.
A worker-owned network
of artists-owned shows.
Supported
directly
by you.